Bad News by Edward St. Aubyn. Read by Alex Jennings. Chapter 1. Patrick pretended to sleep, hoping the seat next to him would remain empty, but he soon heard a briefcase sliding into the overhead compartment. Opening his eyes reluctantly, he saw a tall, snub-nosed man.
"Hi, I'm Earl Hammer," said the man, extending a big freckled hand covered in thick blonde hair. "I guess I'm your seating companion."
"Patrick Melrose," said Patrick mechanically, offering a clammy and slightly shaking hand to Mr. Hammer.
Earlier the previous evening, George Watford had telephoned Patrick from New York.
"Patrick, my dear,"
he said in a strained and drawling voice, slightly delayed by its Atlantic crossing,
"I'm afraid I have the most awful news for you. Your father died the night before last in his hotel room. I've been quite unable to get hold of either you or your mother. I believe she's in Chad with the Save the Children Fund. But I hardly need tell you how I feel. I adored your father, as you know. Oddly enough, he was supposed to be having lunch with me at the Key Club on the day that he died. But of course he never turned up. I remember thinking how unlike him it was. It must be the most awful shock for you. Everybody liked him, you know, Patrick. I've told some of the members there and some of the servants, and they were very sorry to hear about his death."
"Where is he now?" asked Patrick coldly.
"At Frank E. McDonald's in Madison Avenue. It's the place everyone uses over here. I believe it's awfully good."
Patrick promised that as soon as he arrived in New York, he would call George.
"I'm sorry to be the bringer of such bad news," said George. "You're going to need all your courage during this difficult time."
"Thanks for calling," said Patrick.
"I'll see you tomorrow." "Goodbye, my dear."
Patrick put down the syringe he had been flushing out and sat beside the phone without moving. Was it bad news? Perhaps he would need all his courage not to dance in the street, not to smile too broadly. Sunlight poured in through the blurred and caked window panes of his flat. Outside, in Ennismore Gardens, the leaves of the plane trees were painfully bright. He suddenly leapt out of his chair.
"You're not going to get away with this," he muttered vindictively.
The sleeve of his shirt rolled forward and absorbed the trickle of blood on his arm.
"You know, Paddy,"
said Earl, regardless of the fact that nobody called Patrick Paddy,
"I've made a hell of a lot of money, and I figured it was time to enjoy some of the good things in life."
It was half an hour into the flight, and Paddy was already Earl's good buddy.
"How sensible of you,"
gasped Patrick.
"I've rented an apartment by the beach in Monte Carlo, and a house in the hills behind Monaco. Just a beautiful house,"
said Earl, shaking his head incredulously.
"I've got an English butler. He tells me what sports jacket to wear. Can you believe that? And I've got the leisure time to read the Wall Street Journal from cover to cover."
"A heady freedom,"
said Patrick.
"It's great. And I'm also reading a real interesting book at the moment called Megatrends, and a Chinese classic on the art of war. Are you interested in war at all?"
"Not madly," said Patrick.
"I guess I'm biased. I was in Vietnam," said Earl, staring at the horizon through the tiny window of the plane.
"You liked it?"
"Sure did,"
Earl smiled.
"Didn't you have any reservations?"
"I tell you, Paddy, the only reservations I had about Vietnam were the target restrictions. Flying over some of those ports and seeing tankers deliver oil you knew was for the Viet Cong, and not being able to strike them. That was one of the most frustrating experiences of my life."
Earl, who seemed to be in an almost perpetual state of amazement at the things he said, shook his head again. Patrick turned towards the aisle, suddenly assailed by the sound of his father's music, as clear and loud as breaking glass. But this oral hallucination was soon swamped by the vitality of his neighbour.
"Have you ever been to the Tahiti Club in Saint-Tropez, Paddy? That's a hell of a place. I met a couple of dancers there."
His voice